You are Locked On Ravens, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Ravens, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It's the Thursday edition of the Locked On Ravens podcast. Today we're going to be diving into what the State of the Ravens press conference for new general manager of the Baltimore Ravens, Eric DaCosta, what he said, what some of that stuff means, what we can probably look forward to this offseason and beyond for the Ravens. We're going to be talking a lot about, you know, what the offseason is going to look like in terms of getting rid of players or potentially keeping players. We're going to be looking at the difference between Ozzie Newsome and Eric DaCosta. We're going to be talking a little about scouts, which is always a big and important thing when you're looking at this team and how they've succeeded over the years, draft strategy, and some of the other things that DaCosta had kind of mentioned. First, we're going to kick things off with Joe Flacco. Obviously, this offseason, the biggest talking point for the Ravens, for Ravens fans, and even starting to kind of branch out around the rest of the league, is Joe Flacco's status. Now, he's set to make $26.5 million against the cap in 2019. Baltimore's not very likely to keep him on board at that price. He's going to be a backup quarterback. They've already admitted that, you know, Lamar Jackson's their guy. They're not going to keep Joe Flacco at that type of a cap hit to be a backup quarterback. So, really, you're looking at two options. Trading him, or you're looking at just outright cutting him. Now, Baltimore isn't going to want to outright cut him because, well, to put it simply, they're not going to get anything for him. You only get comp picks when a guy hits the end of his contract and he just hits free agency and gets signed elsewhere. That's not going to happen for Joe because he's not at the end of his contract. The Ravens would have to cut him. So they're going to look to trade him. Now, you look at that and you go, okay, $26.5 million cap hit. I believe once he's actually traded, if he's actually traded, it'll be closer to about an $18 million cap hit. The Baltimore Ravens are going to have to eat some of that signing bonus money, the prorated signing bonus money for the rest of his contract. So you're looking at right around $18 million for another team. That's if Baltimore doesn't eat any additional cap space in order to make a deal a little bit more interesting to another team, which they very well could do. DaCosta came out and pretty much said, yeah, we're going to trade him. You know, they said, look, it only takes one team to make something happen. And that the league covets quarterbacks. I think when you look at that, that's pretty much Baltimore saying, look, we're going to trade him. I mean, it's if we can find a trade partner, he's gone. DaCosta did kind of note that, you know, look, if we can't find a trade partner, then we'll have to figure something out. The reality of that's probably he's going to get cut. I can't imagine Joe Flacco is going to take a cap hit or reduce his salary for some reason when realistically he could go out into free agency and probably make a pretty penny going somewhere else to a team that needs a starting quarterback. So the likelihood is the Ravens are going to go ahead and trade him. Now, it follows what with Harbaugh had said, that he believes a big market will be there for Joe Flacco. DaCosta kind of echoed the same thing, that he thinks, you know, it all takes one team, but this league does covet quarterbacks, so that's probably going to be the case. Now, Baltimore can really only actually start trading or start the process of trading Joe Flacco March 13th. That's the start of the league year for 2019. It's also the point in which free agency actually starts. So we'll probably see some more talk about that around that time. But Baltimore really is in no major hurry. They have just under $32 million in cap space as of right now by the estimate, according to Over the Cap. That's with Joe Flacco's salary already in the books. So they're not in any huge pressure to go ahead and get rid of him. But as DaCosta had said, it only takes one team. And we could see that go ahead and happen. The Ravens have also kind of had this weird story that's been around. I personally gave no real credence to it. But there had been talk that Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh, kind of a little bit of a rift, that they fought, that they didn't really like each other all that much, and that there was some upper end kind of arguments and stuff going on. Now, DaCosta kind of came out and was very adamant about the fact that, look, it's not true. As he kind of said, quote, it just wasn't true. It was a personal thing. It wasn't work-related. It wasn't game-related. It was personal, and it was simply something that was not true. You know, DaCosta seemed to be kind of, I don't want to say beat up about it or saddened by it, but he did seem to be, you know, like a little miffed. Look, there's no reason for us to be talking about that type of thing. If you were still kind of holding on to that hope, I mean, they did give Harbaugh a four-year contract, a new deal completely, not an extension, but a completely new deal for 4 years that keeps him through 2022. If you're DaCosta, there's no way you make that happen. There's no way you go ahead and ink him if you don't like the guy. DaCosta did go as far as to kind of say, we're neighbors here in the building as well as in real life. They, you know, they live right next door to one another in real life. So, you know, DaCosta was pretty adamant about the idea that, look, he believes in Harbaugh. He's riding with him. He values him as a coach. He values him as a guy that he works with. Yeah, you know, that really should be the end of that as far as DaCosta seemed to have. One of the things that DaCosta had kind of noted before, I've looked at that over at ravenswire.usatoday.com. One of the things that he had mentioned before that he wanted to differ from Ozzie Newsome on was using analytics. And that kind of means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But, you know, the Ravens have started to use analytics a little bit more over the last few seasons. Now, to that extent, you know, we're not entirely sure. No team really throws out everything they do 100% and lets every other team know about it and how they grade guys. But, you know, they have brought on analytics people previously to under Ozzie Newsome to go ahead and run some of that stuff. DaCosta did kind of say, look, he values analytics more than Ozzie Newsome did, and that they're going to make it a little bit more of their scouting and evaluation process. But DaCosta did go ahead and make sure to point out, he was careful of this, that it's not going to be the sole thing. It's not going to be the sole decision maker. It's not going to be the only thing they're going to use. It's just going to be kind of to help organize information, to maybe find a trend, to maybe confirm kind of what their eyes are seeing on tape or in person, and just to be that little extra to hopefully where you're not having any busts. You know, the worst case scenario is you might have a guy who maybe doesn't perform up to his level, but isn't quite the same level of a bust of like a Breshad Perryman is a good example. So, you know, that's one of the things that DaCosta had said that he's going to kind of do different than Ozzie Newsome. Another thing that he really honed in on that was going to be a little bit different under his vision than maybe under Ozzie Newsome's was being a little bit more smarter with the salary cap. And he kind of parroted that sentiment again Wednesday to reporters at his State of the Ravens press conference. He said that, look, he wanted to be better with the salary cap and then use analytics better. Now, his quote was, I think we want to be financially responsible when it comes to the salary cap. So what that means is, well, to be honest, a little nebulous. It could mean something as simple as, you know, they don't want to give out giant contracts to guys. It could mean something... you know, they want to be a little bit better with bonuses and maybe lessen cap hits that way. You know, we've seen that with other teams in recent off seasons. Mike Wallace actually was a great example with the Philadelphia Eagles. When you look at his contract via over the cap, they even kind of noted in their comp pick formula that he actually might be eligible for that, or might not be eligible for that, because the Eagles actually kind of put a lot of his salary as bonuses, as incentives, as workouts, things that don't necessarily count against the salary cap, as it were, and certainly don't count against the comp pick formula, but still go ahead and it's an attractive deal. All of a sudden, you've got a guy who's maybe making $1 million, and I can't remember what Mike Wallace's contract is off the top of my head, but I believe it was right around like $1 million, give or take a little bit. But you have incentives, you have workout bonuses, you have all these types of things that, as long as a player is doing what he's supposed to do, he's going to hit those base incentives. That deal's worth significantly more. But you can go ahead and say, we didn't give him a big contract. It looks a little better. It feels a little better. And it also kind of protects you against some of those players who maybe don't pan out. You can make some things incentive-based rather than just handing them a contract, or whether it be a base salary or a signing bonus. You could be a little bit more inventive with that stuff. That's something that DaCosta's kind of noted before, that he wanted to be inventive. He wanted to be innovative with the salary cap. And then certainly here on Wednesday, he said he wanted to be financially responsible. Now, we've seen the Ravens get themselves into some salary cap issues in the past. They've chopped up deals, whether they've kind of gotten rid of guys or they've done some weird extensions, like in the case of Joe Flacco, where they've kind of pushed off some of that cash, but then gave him another extension, which, you know, is normal, but it doesn't really lead to a position like where they're dealing with Joe Flacco right now. You can't just cut the guy. I mean, that's not really an option you want to have, because you're going to eat that cap space. You're going to have a guy that is either on your salary cap one way or another, whether it be dead space, whether it be outright salary cap, because you're not going to cut him, or you are going to trade him and you're just going to eat the dead money. You still have to deal with that. So maybe being a little bit smarter there, restructuring contracts, you know, we've seen it with Brandon Williams. I mean, I think he's undergone like three restructures over the last like three seasons that he's been signed. And that's one of those situations where you're not being smart up front with the salary cap space, and you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul in order to sign a guy, or in order to go ahead and make a move elsewhere on a guy that you like. Maybe not going ahead and doing that, because what that does is it just pushes money further on down the line. And again, just like with Joe Flacco and that type of a contract, you're now left with a guy who has a year or two left on his deal, but is making so much money or counts so much dead cap that it's impossible to get rid of him in any reasonable way. So that could very well be the case. It's something that they want to go ahead and fix. And then, like I had mentioned, bonus money and maybe trying to utilize that a little bit more. What that'll do is it'll allow them to kind of know what their salary cap is and to be a little bit more realistic about it, and maybe not go ahead and make some of those crazy moves they've had to in the past, where then you get into salary cap hell. So that could be the case. It could also just be something as simple as, look, making a little bit more attention to the deals that you hand out, not inking guys to the hugest deals in the world and going, hey, we're going to be willing to let guys walk. Because no, I'm not going to pay you $3 million more than you're worth over every year, simply because it's just the way free agency works. So we could see a little combination of that type of stuff. Well, guys, if you got one of those cool new, like Alexa speakers or one of those types of smart speakers, make sure that you go ahead and add the skill to play the podcast Locked On Ravens. You're listening to us now, probably on your phone or on your computer. You might have uploaded it or downloaded it somewhere onto like an MP3 player, something along those lines. Now you can go ahead and listen on Alexa. Just make sure to say, play podcast Locked On Ravens in order to get it on your smart speaker. That way you can play it throughout your entire house. All right, we're back talking a little bit about what Eric DaCosta had kind of done and said in his State of the Ravens address on Wednesday. You know, DaCosta was relatively open about the idea of CJ Mosley. And as he said, everything's on the table when it comes to Mosley. I take that to mean, now, obviously with any of these types of press conferences, the talk is maybe not as transparent as you'd like it to be, but for me, when you say everything's on the table, that opens it up to the franchise tag being an option. Now, when you look at the franchise tag, it doesn't seem like it would be an option. You've got the franchise tag for the inside linebacker is expected to be over $15 million. In 2019. Now, last year it was just under that, like $14.96 million or something along those lines. Pretty close on that. You're going to have to go ahead and have that as an option if you're Baltimore, if you cannot ink Mosley to a long-term deal. DaCosta had kind of pointed out, look, we want him here. We're going to do everything that we can to make sure CJ is back on the team. Again, I think that opens up the talk of the franchise tag. And while it's over $15 million, that is a big hit when you talk about, you know, Luke Kuechly for the Carolina Panthers, who is the highest paid inside linebacker, has a deal that is only right around, you know, $12.5 million per year. $15 million for a single season is a big hit. Baltimore does have the cap space to do it, however, and it would give them some time to continue working out a deal. Now, Baltimore can go ahead and do that as of February 19th. That's the first day you can make a franchise tag on or put a franchise tag on a player. The end day, the day that you have to decide to get off the pot, or to go ahead and make the move is March 5th. Now, free agency opens up March 13th. So, you know, you've got some time if you're Baltimore. You don't necessarily have to tag them on February 19th, which is coming up in just a few weeks. But, you know, if talks aren't going anywhere, you can always put that out there as a final option of going, look, we'll keep you for another year at $15 million. Sure, it's a good chunk of change. But as we saw last year with Le'Veon Bell, you know, players don't necessarily like dealing with the franchise tag. They like getting the roster or the signing bonus money. That stuff comes up front. They like going ahead and getting a deal. They like being able to say, look, I'm the highest paid guy at this position, or, you know, this is where I rank in this position in terms of contract. It is a bit of an ego thing, but it's also a bit of a money thing. By saying, look, I'm going to go ahead and franchise tag you if you're the Ravens, it gives you a year to go ahead and do that. It also gives you maybe a little bit of leverage in saying, hey, don't work out a deal. I'll keep you for another year. I'll keep franchise tagging you until the cows come home. If you want to go ahead and play it that way, you're not going to make the money that necessarily you want to make. That's obviously probably where the breakdown is in negotiations. So let's try to maybe find a better middle ground. Let's try to go ahead and do something, or else you're going to play under the franchise tag in 2019. Now, Mosley's been pretty calm and collected about it before. Obviously got done with his fifth year option in 2018. And whenever asked about it, he's pretty much said, look, I'm just going to go out on the field. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to do what I do. I leave that to my agent. I leave that to the front office. That's what they do. I'm not going to poke my head in there because that's not my business. That's not what I do. I don't really know what's going on in there. So Mosley doesn't seem to necessarily be too concerned with the idea of anything. He hasn't necessarily balked at the idea of playing under the franchise tag. So Eric DaCosta kind of putting that out there might get a response back when we eventually hear a little bit more from CJ Mosley, or when talk of that type of stuff starts to happen. We might hear a little bit more of Mosley maybe balking at the idea of playing under the franchise tag, or just being cool with it and willing to go ahead and bet on himself on a single year for a larger contract. In addition to CJ Mosley, obviously we're talking about free agents, we're talking about pending free agents, we're talking about guys that are potential cap casualties. The Ravens have a number of them this offseason. DaCosta really made no commitment to any players. Now, when asked about potential cuts or his vision for the team, you know, he kind of said, look, we want to have a nice mix of veterans and young players, but we're not tied to cutting anybody, and we're not tied to playing anybody. So what that kind of says to me, again, much like the everything's on the table for CJ Mosley, is I'm not sticking by any of these guys. I'm going to build the best team that I possibly can. I'm going to go ahead and be smart with our salary cap, as we kind of mentioned before. And more importantly, if you're a guy that I think is either overpaid, or you're a guy that I feel like I can go ahead and cut you and get someone of equal or better value, I'm going to do that. That's exactly what I'm going to go ahead and do. So guys like Eric Weddle, Marshall Yanda, cornerback Jimmy Smith, while they're fan favorites, while they're guys that the Ravens fans love, they might not be back next season simply because, hey, I can find someone to go ahead and do that job for about the same price or around that. And I think we can maybe go ahead and upgrade. A famous thing under Ozzie Newsome was the 80-20 rule. Can I get 80% of the play for 20% of the pay? I see DaCosta kind of using a similar strategy here and not necessarily caring too much about a legacy of a player as much as Ozzie Newsome did. So we could see, especially a guy like Eric Weddle, potentially go this offseason. It seems like Weddle kind of understands that might be an option as well. He talked initially about retiring if the Baltimore Ravens were going to cut him. He since kind of backed off of that and kind of hinted that he might be interested in playing again elsewhere next season. We'll kind of see how that happens if the Baltimore Ravens go ahead and cut him. But DaCosta really kind of made no strong play one way or another, which, you know, in my opinion, is the initial stages of saying, we're going to make the changes that we need to go ahead and make. And if it's a guy that fans love, well, that sucks. But we got to do what we got to do because you care about winning. One of the other big things that we've heard in previous off seasons was the scouting department. You know, last off season at the State of the Ravens address, owner Steve Bisciotti had kind of pointed out the loss of scouts as being something that the Ravens really wanted to look and getting better at. They lost a number of scouts over the last few years, guys that are getting poached away to go to other teams and become general managers or become, player personnel guys and getting those upgrades and title and I'm sure money as well, let's be honest. But the Ravens never really did a good job of filling that gap of bringing in guys. And what you would end up have happening, and what Bisciotti had kind of pointed out last offseason, was then you have this disparity. You have young guys coming in that haven't had a chance to really learn very well or very much under our guys, and you're having some missteps. You're having some miscues. And that's something that they wanted to go ahead and change. Now, DaCosta came out this time and kind of flipped the script and said, look, he doesn't expect to make any changes in the scouting team. He more specifically quoted, I'm really comfortable with our scouts. I think we've got the best group in the league. Now, he did say, look, there's probably going to be some role changes. Milt Hendrickson had gotten hired a few days ago by the Green Bay Packers to kind of take on a larger role over there. He was a national scout for the Ravens. They had kind of barred him from making the move in 2017, 2018. So we have a guy that has left, but DaCosta said, look, there's some role changes that are going to happen. We're going to keep things fresh, but there's not going to be any major outside hires. They're not going to do a big shakeup. They're going to kind of march forward with the guys they have and maybe put them in better positions to scout the things that they're better at scouting versus going ahead and just kind of changing everything willy-nilly. Another big thing that Ravens fans are going to love, especially, and this will help us when it comes time for the NFL draft and doing mock drafts, the Ravens put an emphasis, DaCosta put an emphasis on hands. Now, we'll get a little bit more into that, obviously, when you're hearing about, hands. The first thing I think most fans go to is Breshad Perriman and his lack of hands. Guy had the size, guy had the speed, not necessarily a great route runner, but, not as terrible as I think some people thought he was. But paying a little bit more attention to hands and paying a little bit more attention to, making receptions. And that's something that Baltimore has kind of maybe put a more recent emphasis on. And I'll go ahead and quote what he had said. He said, but in the end, I've learned from Ozzie that the guy has to catch the football first and foremost. And you'd like the guy to have some toughness and some speed and some route running ability. But there's a lot of different things you look for when talking about, how he kind of scouts out wide receivers and the Ravens' difficulties in doing that previously. Now, you've got John Brown as a pending free agent. You got Michael Crabtree as a potential cap casualty this offseason. Baltimore is in the market for wide receivers, both in the draft and in free agency. And we've talked a little about that over the last two episodes. That is kind of giving you an indication as a fan, as someone who's maybe looking at different options, hands are going to be a top priority. No longer are we going to necessarily take a guy that is 6'4", runs a 4.240, but can't catch to save his life. You might see them put a little more emphasis on these guys aren't necessarily the most physically gifted, but man, he's going to catch every ball that comes in his area. And I personally like that. That's something that you cannot teach a guy how to catch. A guy either has that by the time you get to the NFL or he does not. That's not something that dramatically improves. It's something that sucks or is great. That's going to be the case still. And when you look at Michael Crabtree, drops. When you look at John Brown, drops. You look at Mike Wallace, drops. You look at Breshad Perriman, drops. You look at a number of these guys, Baltimore has kind of cycled through last offseason, gutted their entire wide receiver core, brought in new guys, hoping that was going to happen. It looks like they could gut their wide receiver core once again. I expect them to go ahead and focus a little bit more on hands versus the other things. Let those guys learn how to go ahead and run routes a little bit better. You can teach them how to gain a little bit of separation. You don't have to be the fastest guy in the world. We've seen that with Steve Smith Sr. at the end of his career. Guy was still able to get separation. He wasn't on a straight line burner. He was not running a 4.340 any longer. He was a guy that was at the end of that side of his career. Anquan Boldin is another perfect example. And Ozzie Newsome had kind of even mentioned him previously when talking about some of his failures as a scout for wide receivers. He had pointed to Boldin as a guy that he knocked on his draft board because he didn't have the speed. And it turns out, hey, the guy was pretty good after all. And speed necessarily wasn't the end all be all there for a wide receiver. So it seems like we're watching DaCosta kind of evolve a little bit from where Newsom was, and maybe put emphasis on some other things that Newsom didn't, which for wide receivers, hopefully that's a change in, you see guys start to pan out a little bit more. You see guys, maybe you're not going to go ahead and get a quote-unquote number one wide receiver, but you're going to get guys that fit a role. You're going to get guys that are consistent. Hopefully that's the case. Hopefully. We'll see exactly how that plays out over time, but you know, if that's the case, that'll dramatically help Lamar Jackson, help his development. It'll help Baltimore go ahead and craft a passing attack under David Culley and Greg Roman. It'll do a lot of positive things for him. It could also mean that maybe they go ahead and focus on wide receivers in the middle of the draft, which, again, is something that we'll talk a little bit more about when we go to do mock drafts a little bit later on. DaCosta as a whole had a pretty solid press conference, in my opinion. I think, you know, he answered a lot of the questions that you were expecting him to answer. He maybe wasn't necessarily fully transparent. No general manager in this league is. In some ways, he was maybe a little too transparent. I think, obviously, talking about Joe Flacco and saying, look, we're going to trade him. I think, you know, hurts your leverage a little bit. Now teams aren't going to be as willing to pony up a higher-end pick to kind of get you to make a move. They recognize you're going to do something. It's just a matter of where are guys coming in at. So we could see that if there are no big trade wars for Joe Flacco's services. That being said, he could always have calls already from teams that are going, hey, this is what I'm willing to give you. We're willing to go up to this. Well, let's talk. So he could have information that obviously we don't. But all in all, DaCosta did a good job of kind of setting this as his own. You know, typically Newsom, even less transparent about the needs, about the moves that they're going to make, about how they're going to go ahead and change things from year to year. DaCosta was a little bit more transparent with us, a little bit more open about that, and that's a positive. That means we know a little bit more about where this team's going to be headed and what guys they could potentially target and what guys they could potentially target to cut. A lot of different moves now feel a little bit better if you're one of us. If you're a media member or if you're a fan, you have a better idea of what the Baltimore Ravens are going to go ahead and do. And I think that's a good thing. Now, we'll dive a little bit more into this DaCosta press conference over the next, you know, rest of this week. We talked about a lot of the large things here, but there are some small things that did pop up as well. You know, Za'Darius Smith, he talked a little about that. He talked a little about his overall vision. And we'll talk a little bit more about those things the rest of this week. But other than that, it was a pretty solid press conference, in my opinion. And I think DaCosta put the Ravens in a good position to move forward and kind of built this legacy as his own. All right, guys. Well, make sure that you tune in on Friday. That will be our last episode of the week. But we're going to have some pretty positive things going into next week. Again, we'll probably talk a little bit more about mock drafts at that point and start talking about some players that the Ravens could be targeting in the 2019 NFL Draft. Make sure you go ahead and follow us, MatthewS_NFL on Twitter and @LockedOnRavens on Twitter, in order to go ahead and follow everything that we're doing, everything that I'm doing. Share, like, do all those different things you got to do on social media in order to let us know. Let me know that you guys are listening to this, that you guys like what we're doing, and that you know, we're heading the right direction. I don't want to do this if you guys aren't fully engaged into it. So make sure that you guys let me know that you are fully engaged into it. We might also try to open up a call-in line for you guys to maybe leave like quick little messages that we can then play on the air on these podcasts later on. So that's something I'll talk about doing and see if we can't go ahead and do. Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your Thursday and enjoy. Go Ravens.